What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Talking Chop Podcast. I'm your host, Brad Roland. This is episode number 18, and we're coming to you live on this fine Sunday evening. It's late on a Sunday night, but that's okay. It's always good to talk some Braves baseball, and today joining me is the great Eric Cole. What's going on, Eric?
Hey, buddy. How are you doing? How do you enjoy that game seven, huh?
Oh, my gosh, man. My NBA duties obviously helped me to make sure that I had to tune into game seven, but I definitely wanted to anyway, and that's probably why we're recording late. We don't want to say that out loud, I guess, but it's certainly why we're recording late. Let's go ahead and admit to that. And but yeah, I enjoyed it a great deal. Whoever you were rooting for, I didn't really have a rooting interest, which makes it even more fun. Just enjoy the way it went down, and another great sporting event. I know this is not a basketball podcast. We won't do a lot of basketball, but it was a whole lot of fun for sure.
It was definitely a lot of fun, even though I'm a long-suffering Knicks fan.
Oh Lord!
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
It was
a great game to watch, and you know, even though I was like a little worried that we're gonna be recording late tonight, like I'm like pumped, and you know, there's lots of fun things to talk about with the Braves going on right now, and I was a little worried that I wasn't gonna have like the energy going into it, but like after that game, I'm good. I'm in.
Yeah, me too. I think energy will not be at a low tonight, and part of that is the reason. You know, the Atlanta Braves are quietly, or not so quietly, playing their best baseball of the season, coming off a sweep of the New York Mets this weekend, and with five straight wins. I ask you plainly, Eric, what is happening with the Atlanta Braves right now?
I mean, well, they just got a quarter of their win total, you know, in basically a week.
That seems good, except for the fact that it's in June. But hey, it's good. It's good.
You know, Freddie Freeman's hitting out of his mind. You know, five of his past seven games, he has three plus hits. That seems good. Eric Ibar has six hits during this win streak, which seems, based on his play of the first couple months, improbable. He still can't catch the ball, but, you know, at the very least, he's being more productive at the plate. They scored 31 runs in five games, which, again, seems good. And based on what we've seen out of them up until now, seems almost impossible. And they've been pitching really well, with the exception of the one game where they went 13 innings, and it seemed like, you know, every time someone scored, you know, the other team came right back and, you know, tied the game right up. And they ended up winning that game in extras 9-8. Freddie went hit for the cycle in that game, and, you know, the Reds, you know, took a two-run lead in the 13th inning, and then we all thought the game was over, and then, you know, out of nowhere, just like RBI single, RBI single, RBI single, the game's over. It's been a lot of fun to watch, especially since it's been a really tough season as a Braves fan. But at the same time, just watching the players that they have on the field and what they should be accomplishing, I didn't feel like they were nearly as bad as what their record was showing. So it's nice to see them kind of things leveling out. I'm not going to ever claim that this is a playoff team, but I certainly didn't think that they were, like, you know, as like historically bad, which is what they were the first month or two of the season.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think anybody expected that. I think Coffey has been public about saying that he didn't expect that. Our staff, you know, we didn't have a ton of high expectations about this season, but at the same time, nobody thought this was going to be an historically bad team. So it's fun to watch them play well. I think of Ender Inciarte on Saturday night, kind of just taking over the game as much as you can in baseball, doing everything, running the bases with fury, playing great defense. That kind of, I think he definitely, you know, integrated himself with the fan base in a really positive way with the way that he played on Saturday night, and that was probably the best win of the season. I mean, national TV, come from behind or come from, you know, a battling back and forth game against an arch rival in the Mets. That was a whole lot of fun. And to follow that up with a sweep and a Julio Teheran one-hitter. Yes, you heard that right. One-hitter on Sunday afternoon to close things out. It was, and you know, it's, again, as you mentioned, this is not a season that's really going anywhere as far as wins and losses are concerned. But seeing the team play better and seeing them play an entertaining brand of baseball is a lot of fun.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, at the height of Julio's powers, I mean, he had a couple chances at no-hitters. You know, one was broken up like in the ninth inning against Pittsburgh a couple years ago. Another one was against the Twins, and he went deep into games with like these like, you know, with, you know, no-hitters or, you know, really close to perfect games, and they would like get broken up by like a solo homer because that's just what Teheran seemed to give up. So it was really kind of nice to see him really put together a good outing without giving up any runs. Got him some national media attention, which he frankly deserves. He's been really, really good this year.
Yeah, Julio's been really good. Actually, we can kind of at least halfway transition into the mailbag. We got a funny question about Julio Teheran from at Sam the Man 180. He plainly asks, "Is Julio Teheran the greatest pitcher of all time?" Eric, your thoughts?
Absolutely not.
Well, that's not a fun opinion at
Yeah.
all.
Okay. First of all, if you are a true baseball fan, you need to watch Clayton Kershaw pitch because you're not going to see a lot of pitchers like him, period, in your lifetime. But he's been, I mean, Teheran's been awesome, and frankly, every game he pitches makes it more likely that he's going to be an Atlanta Brave for a long time because the price is not going down on him. This past offseason, he was a very high, like a hot topic, you know, whether or not he was going to be traded. And honestly, you know, I mean, he's kind of turning into the player that the Braves want to have around, which is a young guy under control for cheap who can perform on the field. And, you know, if I'm, you know, the Braves front office, I'm thinking to myself, what do we really want back? Because this is the kind of player that we want on our roster to begin with.
Yeah, for sure. And Julio, with how he's pitching this year, there's a lot more safety in him than really any other pitcher in the system anywhere, obviously. He's already the best pitcher on the staff, and he's still young enough, and the cost control is so appealing that it definitely validates the rumors that Teheran, the asking price for him is off the charts. This week, John Heyman, formerly of CBS Sports, now of Fanrag Sports, put a report out there. Surrounding both Freddie Freeman and Julio Teheran. Basically, in the report, it says that Freeman is totally off limits. That's a quote from Heyman. And that any talk around Teheran is already cooling off considerably. I think it's pretty clear that the asking price for Julio is through the roof. We saw that it took a massive package to return Shelby Miller over the winter, and I think it might even be higher for Julio in season, given his cost control and given that he's proven more than Miller has proven. And obviously, I don't want to pile on Shelby Miller, who's having a poor season in Arizona, but even then, last year was easily his best year in a while in the Braves uniform. And while Julio was, had a rough go of it last year, he's kind of had more of a track record of success than Shelby did at the same amount of time. And he, arguably has a better contract considering it goes longer and has it's through arb in a couple more years. So no surprise to see that Heyman is reporting this kind of stuff, but it is noteworthy because a lot of the questions that we get on a regular basis, both in the comments on Twitter, various places, is always around Freeman and Teheran and the trade rumors, and it looks like neither one of those guys is going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, especially since a lot of the teams that could deal for Teheran and would have the prospects to deal for Teheran aren't going to deal with him. You know, it's just you don't deal guys, you know, most of the time you don't deal these top prospect guys unless it's, you know, a very, very specific circumstance. And, you know, one the name that comes often up more often than not is the Red Sox. And I don't think it's lost on Frank Wren, the now team president of the Red Sox, that the team that wants to get rid of Teheran is the team that fired him. So, you know, it's just kind of, you know, there's factors that go into big package deals like that, and that ultimately both teams, there's so much risk associated with on both sides that it's almost just not worth it. And we're kind of getting to that point where Teheran, where, you know, the deal that would take to get him would be so expensive that it just becomes cost prohibitive.
Yeah, just don't tell Dave Stewart that, because Dave Stewart,
Well,
paid the cost for
they
the
don't have
package.
anyone left.
No, I know. I just mean in general. But yeah, I'm with you on Boston. It's one of those things where it looks good on paper because they have some prospects and a real need in the starting rotation. I think another team that's been brought up a lot is the Pirates. Pittsburgh is trying to compete in a big way, and they have sort of a couple of prospects that are blocked. Especially Austin Meadows in the outfield, because Pittsburgh's major league outfield right now is awesome
Yep.
across the board, and Meadows kind of has nowhere to go, and because they have Pittsburgh has sort of a need in the rotation, so that makes some sense, but at the same time, that'd be a deal inside the National League, and again, the asking price is probably
Yeah,
through the
and
roof.
the problem with the Pirates too is they actually have a couple of really young rotation prospects too, with
Yeah, Tyler
Tyler Glasnow and Talon, who, you know, Teon, who were both really, really good, and Jameson's been awesome since he's been called up. So, you know, I think they're going to try to figure it out internally, and if they can't figure it out internally, then maybe, you know, that's a team that could at least call and, you know, see if there's something that can be worked out. But again, the price is so high, I just don't know if it's ever going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you all the way. We're going to be talking about these guys all the way through the deadline because that's just the reality of the situation. When you have a team that's not going anywhere in the standings, all the talk sort of shifts to the minor leagues and the trade deadline. So Those guys are going to come up again. But you know, as of right now, it looks like both guys are cooling off big time on the trade market. And that's You know, depending on where you line up, that could be a good thing or a bad thing. But we'll talk about that more later for sure. Elsewhere in the news this week, some not so exciting news. Malik Smith left Sunday's game. He was hit by a pitch, and he's now been diagnosed officially with a broken left thumb. Malik has been quite good lately. He entered Sunday's game with a .373 on-base percentage in June, and he's really starting to run as well. 14 stolen bases and less than 200 plate appearances this year, which is, you know, a pace of about 45 steals over a full season. Malik has been a lot of fun, and I know a lot of Reds fans are really having their sights set on Malik as a long-term answer, but you never want to see a guy get banged up like this, and there's some uncertainty right now as to how long he'll be out. They're going to do some more evaluation on Monday, but what have you seen from Malik first off, and how worried should Reds fans be about the injury?
I mean, anytime you take you get hit by a pitch and it breaks something, I mean, it's not like a, it's almost like not like on a slide where you can kind of predict, you know, it's not going to be super severe because there's only so much force that can be behind it. When a 95 mile an hour fastball hits your thumb and your thumb is between the ball and the bat, that's I can't imagine how much that hurts. And, you know, he tried to stay in the game. He tried to tough it out. Luckily, the training staff did the right thing and got him out because, you know, a fractured thumb, that can, you know, depending if it's debatable as whether he's going to need surgery. And, you know, sometimes you need it, sometimes you don't. It just kind of depends on what the break looks like and how bad it is. Based on him trying to stay in the game, I would imagine it couldn't be super severe. But, you know, I would not be surprised if we didn't see Malik until after the All-Star break. But you know, it's a bummer because he's so fun to watch. He's such a high energy player. The Braves finally figured out that they can throw him in there against left-handers and he's not the absolute worst. You know, he's a fun player. You know, he does silly things on the base path sometimes and he doesn't do everything right, but he's not supposed to. He's a rookie and he does a lot of things right and he's been outstanding defensively too. So it's a bummer. We're probably going to see Emilio Bonifacio in his place, which is much less exciting than seeing Malik Smith out there.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Yes.
Yeah. But Bonifacio has been very serviceable down in Gwinnett, and hopefully he doesn't come up here and, you know, bat .220 and, you know, can't figure out how to play any of the 12 positions he can play. But, you know, hopefully it works out. But we're probably going to see more time with, you know, Ender moving around, you know, the outfield based on the, you know, needs and all that stuff. And luckily, defensively, their Ender's out there, but I really wish we could see Malik out there because he's a lot of fun.
Yeah, Ender covers up a lot of holes, and I think, you know, ideally for me, just throw Ender in center field every day. It doesn't matter what happens. And platoon Bonifacio and Francoeur, that's what I would do at this point. I don't know what Brian Snicker will do. In the grand scheme, that doesn't matter as much as Malik's being healthy long-term. I think the Braves have every incentive to take it easy with Malik here. Even if they get a favorable diagnosis, throw him on the DL if you need to. Take the extra week. Take the Bobby Cox approach, the extra time. He was always famous for that. And, you know, with a guy this young on a team that's not going anywhere, there is no reason to rush Malik here.
No, not at all.
I agree with you for sure, though. It is encouraging that he's been playing more against left-handed pitching. There's just no reason not to play him. You got to let this guy grow against lefties. That's been obviously a bugaboo for him and Ender, is their ability to hit lefties. And, you know, just not playing them is not going to help anything, especially without another, you know, a great option. Yes. Obviously, Francoeur is better right now against lefties than Malik is, but just play him anyway.
Yeah, and it's, you know, with Ender, he has a track record at the major league level of not performing against lefties, so that's one thing. But, like, Malik's hit lefties fine in the minors. You just you played him five games against lefties, and you decide he can't hit lefties? That just didn't make any sense to me. But,
yeah,
you know, I'm glad they seem to have figured it out finally that, you know, let the kid play. So
yeah, I agree. It's nonsensical. But, yeah, hopefully Malik's, the results will be in shortly, maybe even by the time you listen to this, so we might look silly here. But he does have the broken thumb for sure, and we'll see what the Braves elect to do with his treatment plan. Rounding out the news, a couple more things with some of the younger guys. Tyrell Jenkins is officially a member of the Atlanta Braves.
Thank you.
At the same time, you're excited about this, but he's not appeared in a game yet, and he's in the bullpen. So, your thoughts, sir?
Okay. we found out that this news broke right before the flyaway game or the go-away game. That Tyrell, we found out the night before that Tyrell was getting called up. And, you know, we get to talk to a lot of these young guys, and we're really fortunate to be able to do so. And, you know, we get to cover the minor leagues, get to cover the majors, and it's, you know, I have the best hobby in the world. But I have never been so happy for a player to get called up than Tyrell, because he's deserved it. And, like, he's deserved it as a reliever and a starter this year. And it's been a little frustrating kind of how it's been handled, and kind of he's been a bit unlucky with, like, weather and, you know, being on short rest and things like that, that I feel like that the Braves put him in the bullpen. And I was like, we talked about this last time I was on, I was just so afraid that they were just going to put him in the bullpen and, like, let other things, like other roster management decisions at the major league level, where he'll end up a month and a half later, he's still rotting in the bullpen. And this is a guy who had really been improving as a starting pitching prospect, and last year was your organizational pitcher of the year. And I didn't like the move to the bullpen, but I'm like, if you're going to do it, you have to call him up quickly, because if you just let him rot there, you're not doing him any good at all, and you're not doing your club any good. And I'm glad they called him up. As for an appearance, he only got like 2 hours sleep going, like, he had to come back from a road game to get called up. I feel like they kind of want to, like, give him a little bit of time to adjust and, like, let him throw some bullpens before he actually gets it thrown in there. And I think he would have pitched today, but it just so happens that Tehran decided that he was just going to take matters into his own hands today and just throw a one-hitter. So
yeah, I was going to say the same thing about Ty. I think today might have been the day they were planning on using him.
Yep.
And they just didn't need him. I think there was some Braves fans frustrated on Friday and Saturday about him not appearing, and over some of the guys who did appear that are far less talented than Mr.
Agreed.
Jenkins. So I understand that could be frustrating, but he'll be around soon.
Yeah, I think it was kind of he was on 2 hours sleep thing, and some of those guys, I'm not naming names, Casey Kelly and the rest of you that may not be with the big club for a whole lot longer, they want to make sure Tyrell has, you know, all the time to get adjusted. So that one, because I think he's going to be, I don't think they're sending him back down anytime soon.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just excited to see him pitch at the major league level. And I think I've been a proponent of letting him start. But at the same time, there's a chance that he becomes an upper echelon bullpen arm, and that's okay.
So yeah, that's totally fine. I want him to pitch his way out of a starting spot.
Agreed.
But I am fine with letting him be at the major league level, because he definitely deserves it.
Yeah, I can't wait to see him pitch. Couple more things before we move on to the draft stuff, which is obviously your part of your expertise, of course. But Shea Simmons, we got some negative news about Shea Simmons. He's supposed to be nearing his comeback from injury. He's got some shoulder discomfort, and they've kind of shut him down again. They did an MRI, and it looks like it's all structurally sound, which is good on Shea Simmons. But there's been enough hiccups now where I'm starting to worry. What have you heard about Shea Simmons, and what do you expect him? As far as the Braves and how they handle him moving forward, how careful they should be now, and maybe even giving him a little bit extra time more before they bring him back.
I mean, give him all the time he needs. He has shoulder tendonitis, is what he has. It's the tendon that kind of connects the lat muscle, which I cannot even begin to tell you exactly what, you know, where that specifically that is on the back and near connecting to the shoulder. But I mean, you hear a lot of this, like tendonitis and bone spurs. Like, these are setbacks that happen a lot with guys who are on Tommy John surgery, and not all Tommy John recoveries are smooth. I mean, even recently, plenty of careers have been ruined by having Tommy John surgery and needing it. And a lot of guys are never the same when they come back. And a lot of times they just need more time. I mean, once guys get going and are trying to get on the rehab trail, you know, the their arm's not used to that workload anymore, because they were sidelined for so long. And, you know, once you start really trying to work at it, and as hard as Shea throws, I can understand that maybe his shoulder just needs some time to kind of get used to doing that again. Give him all the time he needs. He's going, you know, hopefully the tendonitis isn't something that, like, is a super lingering problem where he doesn't get to come back this year. But I mean, there's no reason at all to rush him back into that bullpen. The bullpen could certainly use him, because there's some guys in the bullpen who I'm not sure necessarily are major league players anymore, or should be anyway. And, you know, just let him heal up. And, you know, if all the scans, everything I've heard, he's looked good in his appearances. And if he's sore and he has tendonitis, you know, if it gets delayed a month, it gets delayed a month. You know, he's a guy that we want to be around long term, and he could be really good if he gets to stay around.
Yeah, I think it's one of those frustrating things, because you hear that Simmons is close to coming back, and you hear that a couple times, and they have to shut him down. So we've gotten a lot of questions about Simmons and how close he is to coming back, so I wanted to address that. But yeah, I'm with you 100%. Take it easy on him. Again, this is not a team that's competing right now, so they have zero incentive to push the young guys. I'm going to say that over and over and over again with every injury thing on a young guy. Any concern, just take it easy, get him healthy, get him ready to go. Last thing before we move on, Lucas Sims was demoted to AA earlier this week. He has been brutal recently at AAA Gwinnett. His season-long ERA is now 7.56 at the AAA level, with a walk rate of 6.7 per 9 innings over 50 innings this season. That is not good.
No.
Lucas Sims had a very hot start and was starting to get that buzz back. This is a former first-round pick that, you know, a lot of people really like his arm and his talent. His strikeout rate is there. The stuff appears to be there, but he really has no idea where it's going right now. And the Braves, you know, you never like to see guys move down a level in the minors. That's usually a really big warning sign. But in Sims' case, he just can't throw the ball over the plate right now.
No. He has some real mechanical inconsistency right now. It's almost like he's fighting himself in terms of, like, you know, like trying to – it's almost like you can tell he's almost like tipping his pitches, because he feels like he has to do something in his windup and as he's delivering the ball to make sure he's throwing a strike, so that when he actually is doing that, like, the batter is not confused at all as what's about to happen. And that's a real problem when you're fighting yourself, you can't get your mechanics right, and you're not being deceptive at all, because what happens with him – and it was oddly enough, I think it was like the game that you went to see him when, that was like one of the first games he started getting shelled. So I'm just going to blame you.
I think it really might be my fault. I was going to bring that up later. But Sims was great until I went to Gwinnett and he got hammered. And actually looked great in the first inning. I tweeted about how good he looked. And then the wheels came off and they never came back.
When he isn't going right, you know, when he's going right, his fastball does have a lot of like downward run. And, you know, his curveballs looks really good. And it sets up everything. The problem is like when his fastball isn't on and he's having really trouble throwing it for strikes, it becomes a very flat pitch. And when you're like having to take a little bit off of your 96 and like throwing 92, 93, and you're throwing a flat fastball, and a lot of times you just leave it hanging over the plate, what happens is exactly what you've seen happen to him, which is, you know, he puts a couple guys on base, he doesn't have control that night, so he takes some off, and he starts throwing these flat fastballs, and no professional hitter at AAA is going to be fooled by that. It's just not going to happen.
Even at AAA, that's
yeah.
That's
I mean, the like thing. Those guys, those are a lot. I mean, you know, between the journeymen that are just stuck there forever to the guys who are, you know, about to make the jump to the big leagues, that you're not fooling anybody. So unfortunately, they. I hope he has shown the ability to make adjustments. He made them last year in the second half, going into the AFL and coming into this year, that he can make adjustments to where he can be a great strikeout pitcher and a guy who could be someone to be excited about. But I also don't want to undersell what Chris Ellis has done, and he's the guy that took Lucas's spot in Gwinnett. And Ellis has been outstanding. Now, his first start in Gwinnett was a disaster, but down in Mississippi, he's been outstanding all year. Great control, you know, great command of the strike zone. Has just kept that. I think he was 8-1 at the time of his promotion. You know, he just like kept his team in games every game, every outing. Just looked great each time he was out there. So I think some of this has to do with just how well Ellis has been doing, as well as to kind of give Lucas some time away from, you know, away from the spotlight of being so close to the majors to work on some things.
Yeah, and also with Sims, I don't know how much this matters, but this is a local product. He's from Gwinnett County, where the Gwinnett Braves play. And there's kind of always a buzz when he pitches at Gwinnett, because he's from Brookwood, local high school in that area. It's almost like he's the attraction. That may not help a guy like that either, especially when he starts to struggle, because then he might start pressing even more, knowing that he's. I mean, obviously these guys want to get to the majors as soon as possible, and that's always a real, you know, a pressure pack thing. But being close to home may not be the best thing for a guy that's you know, pressing and struggling like that too. So maybe going down to Mississippi will help him straighten some things out. But as you mentioned, there is some some mechanical stuff that you have to get through. And, you know, I think Braves fans are just wanting to know where he is and why he's not up faster. Because, you know, this is, again, this is a first-round pick that people have been hearing about for a long time. And they started to get that ray of light at the beginning of the year, and now it's slowed down. But hopefully, as you mentioned, there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy that can make some adjustments, but it's really on him. This is kind of the year that he has to make that adjustment and keep it. If he doesn't make it, you know, then a lot of the folks, and there's been a lot of them who have always wondered if he's ever going to make it. You know, they may end up being proved out, but you know, he has plenty of time. So,
absolutely. With all that, all that news out of the way, I want to get to your draft thoughts. The MLB draft is about a week and a half old now, at least from the start of it. And Eric was our lead guy on that whole thing. Last week, we gave Eric the week off from the podcast because I think he needed to, you know, take like a 3-day hibernation nap after all the content that went up. And Scott and I talked a little bit about the prospects, but I wanted to get your thoughts on, especially the top tier guys. Your overall thoughts on the trio of Ian Anderson, Joey Wentz, and Kyle Mueller. What do you think about the prospects that they actually are? What do you think about the overall plan to go over slot on the second two guys and sign try to sign Anderson a little bit cheaper? What were your overall thoughts on those three guys?
I am extraordinarily happy. What I thought was going to happen is once the news started breaking that Ian Anderson was like the Braves guy, and we'll talk a little bit about him in a minute, but you know, and they were going to go under slot with him, I was immediately thinking, oh, that means that there's a guy like a Jason Groom or someone like, or maybe even a Blake Rutherford that was going to fall, and they were going to get two first round picks. And they were going to have to basically overslot one guy and then maybe even have to underslot the 44th pick to pay that guy. What the Braves ended up pulling off instead is getting three first-round picks with three prep arms, which we'll talk about why Braves fans lost their minds when all that happened. But fans should be ecstatic that the Braves pulled this off because – it is extraordinarily difficult to pull this sort of strategy off because you have to kind of get guys that are worth it with those comp round picks. Yeah, you have to be able to sign them. And you also have to get guys who are worth signing. You know what I mean? Like, there's plenty of guys who would be kind of like in those 20 to 25 range ranking type players, which would happily take more money. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there are guys that are worth going under slot with your third overall pick with. And I think that both the guys they got are guys who are worth going over slot for and were signed for the right amount. Ian Anderson, he was a guy I looked at, but I didn't really think that was a guy that they were going to be talking about for an under slot deal. If I thought it was going to be an under slot deal, I thought it was going to be a bat, like, you know, maybe a Blake Rutherford or someone like that. And then maybe, you know, sign whoever fell, you know, later on. But the Braves have been on him since last summer, apparently. And like when Brian Bridges says the comp for him is Mike Mussina, that is not a name you just like. Those aren't names you just kind of throw around lightly. You know what I mean?
I had the same thought last week. It was that was a comp that, you know, Mussina wasn't exactly. It's not exactly like one of the best pitchers of all time, but Mussina was an awesome pitcher.
An arguable Hall of Famer.
And not like a guy you just pick out as a comp. Like, that's, yeah. It's a very specific comp. It makes me excited for sure. I'm sure that he, you know, Bridges is probably doing that exact thing to excite someone like me, but at the same time, it's a very specific comp.
Well, that's just it. And, you know, when you hear, you know, the Baseball America guys are like, you know what, we were kind of noticing that the Braves were out in force at every one of Ian Anderson's starts, but we thought they were going to try to get him as an overslot guy at 40. But then I guess the Braves figured out that just never was going to happen because, like, you know, it's not like they were the only team that were in love with him. So they decided to take him at 3. Joey Wentz and Kyle Mueller, we might have the best hitting pitching prospects in the minor leagues.
Give them and Julio?
I'm telling you, we might have the best hitting rotation. I mean, chicks dig the long ball, dude. These guys can hit. They're big guys. I love both of them. They both have great stuff. Mueller was kind of a guy going into the year, and he's the one that actually I worry about the most, in that he was kind of like throwing 89-90 as a junior, and then this year really put in a lot of work in the offseason to kind of build his strength up, and he's a big kid, and now he can throw 94-95 and, you know, has a lot of high-end associated with him, has a really big frame, is just going to get better and better. My problem with Mueller is he was one of these high school kids that was played constantly. And, like, you know, would pitch 120 pitches plus, and then 3 days later go for 130. And, you know, it's – and as a high school coach, I don't understand it, but I at least understand the rationale of he's our best player and we want to, you know, try to win state championships or whatever. But a guy with that much a kid with that much mileage on his arm.
Shout out to Keith Law while we're at it. As a champion of avoiding these kind of things, Keith Law has been on a rampage lately, especially with the college guys of trying to protect his overuse. And this is an instance where it might come back to bite the Braves a little bit, I think, maybe.
Maybe. I mean, you know, he's never had any health problems, and he's going to be in short season ball. So you can manage him. You can if you're in short season ball and you just, you know, kind of like, you know, Colby Allard was kind of an extreme example last year because he was dinged up a bit. But, you know, let him pitch a little bit in short season ball. You know what I mean? Give his arm a break and then get down to instructionals and take it easy. Just kind of see where he is. But keep his arm healthy so that way his first season and full season ball, his arm's really, like, well-rested and good to go. You don't want a guy to just constantly be accumulating more and more innings and miles on his arm for no reason, especially since the amount of mileage he had in his senior season was quite a few. I was really happy with the overslot signings. I really like Cumberland, the catcher from Cal that they drafted with their fourth pick. I don't think he's going to stick as a catcher necessarily.
That's the general consensus, I think, is that he's more of a hitter than anything else.
But the Braves are certainly going to try, and he has experience. I mean, he has, you know, experience at the college level behind the plate, which is not nothing, and he's a switch hitting power hitter. Which, I mean, look, if you're not
sign me up,
yeah, like. The Braves just were clearly not in love with any of these bats. I think they wanted Nick Senzel, but they also knew that the Reds were never gonna pass on him. So if your scouts don't like the bats, then don't pick one until you find one that you like for the right value. And this is a guy who can hit for power from both sides of the plate. And it's not like he has this weird athletic profile, which is the only place he could play with catcher. You know, if you put him at first, you put him at left, you put him out in the outfield, you know, wherever. He could end up being a contributor relatively quickly, I think he's going to start off in short season ball, but I don't think he'll be there very long, especially if his bat plays. If he's catching well, you know, send him up the Rome right away. And I mean, he could be up in the majors quickly. And it doesn't sound like there's any signability problems with any of these guys. I really like some of these other overslot signings that they've got going on. Except for one. I am not a big fan of the Bryce Wilson one where they had like double slot on him.
More than double on the Bryce Wilson's a fourth round pick, right-handed pitcher that was literally a more than double slot price, and that kind of turned some heads around baseball for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Rowland, he's the guy they picked in the 11th round. He's
great name.
Yeah, that's strong name.
Strong name on Matt Rowland. Yeah. Sorry, continue.
he has a really good breaking ball, throws hard. I was ecstatic at that signing. The problem with Bryce is, like, I haven't read anything or seen anything that suggests that he isn't anything but a reliever at the major league level. And you sign him for $1.2 million, and there's a junior college guy who actually was from the same junior college as Justin Ellison, who was a pick last year. Like, they might not be able to sign this kid and this other guy. He's a power-hitting junior college guy, and they may not be able to sign him because they might not have the pool money for it. Versus Bryce Wilson, who I'm not sure if he profiles as a guy who's going to be a starter down the road. But at the same time, you kind of trust the Braves scouts because ultimately they kind of have a lot. They figured a lot out, especially in terms of scouting pitchers. And if they really feel like paying this kid and getting him in the system is worth that much money, then maybe, you know, the Baseball Americas and the, you know, us and others, we're missing something and we don't have the information that they do, because he certainly does have a live arm, but it was more of a whether or not he has a third pitch is going to be the biggest issue.
Yeah, we should say that just to be clean up on this stuff is Wentz and Mueller both signed. Wentz signed for $3.05 million.
Yep.
Mueller signed for $2.5 million. Anderson is not signed yet, but most people seem to think that's because he hasn't graduated high school yet.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. No, there's no
and there's an agreement there from what most people think there's an agreement in place. Is that what you've heard? At least he can't sign, essentially.
Yes, it has to do with, you know, some amateur rules and, you know, eligibility for other things, and that no one has said anything other than just as soon as he graduates high school, he's just going to come sign his contract and come down. So, just being from a Northeast state, you know, their school runs longer, deeper into the year for them, and this takes a little longer.
Yeah, so I just want to get that out there that these guys, it's not as if the Braves are still crossing their fingers and hoping to sign once in the year. Those guys are signed, still delivered. They're already members of the organization, and the plan as it was executed the way they wanted it to. They got three of the top, you know, 25 prospects in the draft.
Yep. Now Braves fans, you know, lost their minds when all three of them were high school prep pitchers.
Yes, let's do this again.
Yep. And look, this was the deepest part of the draft. This is where the most talent was. If you want the Braves to take a guy who's a college bat, but maybe they don't like very much, you know, a Kyle Lewis, who a lot of us liked, but at the end of the day, 11 teams passed on him, which makes you wonder maybe he doesn't have. You know, there's more than just the Braves that were making a decision on him and ultimately deciding maybe it's best we do something, we go a different direction. You know, like a lot of people were upset that who's ever going to score runs, and I'm like, if you don't think this guy is going to score runs, why would you pick him? You pick the best player available, and you try to get the most talent in your system, and then you kind of have to sort out the rest, you know, however you can. But you don't just pick a guy because he swings a bat from the left side or whatever.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. And we talked about it a lot last week with Scott and I. So I don't want to belabor the point, but you take the best players. It is what it is. You know, I know the casual fans are never going to like it, but
Hopefully
this works out and they won't be able to say anything. It's one of those things where in four or five years from now, these guys are up and about to be making debuts and looking good, then maybe people won't be so worried about it. So we'll leave it there for now. But one big question that we've been getting a lot since the draft has to do with our Talking Shop prospect rankings. I won't make you break down the whole list because we do that every so often, and Eric and Garrett and those guys work very hard on this list. But a question we have been getting a lot is where exactly right now would you have Anderson, Wentz, and Mueller on the overall prospect list for the Atlanta Braves?
I asked this as a kind of a general idea. Is that we always have like a working prospect list for each of us, and basically we just kind of argue and yell at each other until we kind of get it all sorted out. This year's a little different because last year it was just Garrett and I, but this year we also have Gaurav, aka Braves Reddit. For those of you who follow him on Twitter, he's fantastic.
He does a great job.
Yeah, and the newcomer Matt Powers, who's been excellent since he's come over as well. What we did is I asked them all to make their preliminary, what their top 30 or so prospects in the system are. We talk a little bit about it just to kind of make sure we don't, like, you know, it's easy to forget a name here and there and things like that, just to kind of make sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing. But sorry, I'm accidentally deleting people's stuff. So generally what we have right now, and just kind of looking at the lists, Ian Anderson has been ranging between five and seven on most lists so far. Then we have Joey Wentz, who's been anywhere from 8th to around 11th. And then Kyle Mueller, who's been as high as 13th, but has actually been as low as like 17th or 18th. All three are top 25 guys. There's been some variance as to where we put, you know, some of them. There's not been much overlap actually at all in terms of where they've been ranking, but, you know, it's more of a little bit of preference. There's certain pitchers and certain position players, especially pitchers though, that, like, you know, that kind of shuffle the rankings a little bit. But that's kind of the general areas where we have all three of those guys.
As far as I'll ask you this two different ways. As far as the overall list, like, how many pitchers in general would kind of rank ahead of Anderson in the system right now? Are you talking about two or three?
Let's see here. Between two and three.
Where do you have these guys individually on your list?
Personally, I have Anderson at six. I have Wentz at 11, and I'm actually one of the lower men on Mueller. I have him at 19.
But, you know, I say low man
as though, I mean, these are high school prep.
I was gonna say it's the high school lefty.
Yeah, you know, I am generally a little more pessimistic on draftees in general, especially high school guys. We had Allard at like 9, I think, at the midseason point last year, just because we didn't have all the information on him. Especially he didn't pitch very much his senior year. We have a little bit more information on these guys, and other than some minor injury stuff with Anderson, you know, we got to see him pitch, and there's lots of information out there on him. So we felt a little better about ranking him a little higher in the top 10. The three pitchers I have ahead of those guys, I still have Newcomb ahead of him, and he's really been coming. His last start, he was really good. I still have Allard. He just made he actually had his first good start of the year. And I also have Mike Soroka ahead of him.
As the world's most leading Mike Soroka expert, I believe that you are.
I don't know if I'd say all that, but I do. I like the kid a lot. Just from a makeup standpoint, he's off the charts. But when his worst start is giving up three runs, you're just like, you just put your hands up and like, what is this kid? You know, usually at least an 18-year-old will like, you know, give up six runs, and you're like, well, better luck next time. But if like he gives up three runs, like you're just like, you actually wonder what's wrong with him because he's been so good this year.
Yeah, I like Soroka a lot too. Before we get away from prospects altogether, we did get a mailbag question that kind of pertains to this from at Clayton Pickens. He asks almost two different questions. Who has the highest ceiling among the prospects in the system right now? And you can include the three guys we just drafted if you need to. And also, who is the most realistic possibility to be the ace of the Braves staff long term? Whatever you think that means, whether it's just becoming a one or two ish in a rotation, or like who's the most realistic guy to reach that point, and who has the highest ceiling?
Okay, we're gonna talk about highest ceiling first because this is gonna make Brad happy.
Tukey
Toussaint.
Yeah.
Have you been following his starts of late, Brad?
I have, but I'm going to let you elaborate because I don't want to get go off the
rails. Don't want to get too excited. His last three starts, he has pitched 20 innings, which is good. You want to be averaging around, you know, if you want to be getting close to 7 innings a start, and that's exactly what he's been doing. He has given up a total of 1 run.
Oh, it's happening. It's all happening.
And he's walked a total of 4 batters.
Yeah, he has.
He's looked really, really good. Velocity is starting to come back up. He's locating his pitches. The curve is still the curve. You kind of wish he was striking out. With his stuff, you'd almost think, how has anyone hit it? But it feels like he's learning how to pitch. He's getting weak contact. He's given up 10 hits total in his past 3 starts. You know, that's you don't ask anything else from a guy other than that.
For our fans, before we get away from Tukey, if you haven't seen his curveball yet, go find the video. Go find the video. We have it on our site.
It is on JJ Cooper's Twitter. It was pinned. It was his pinned tweet for literally 3 months.
It's majestic.
It is majestic. Just watch Tukey's curveball. It is a fun pitch to watch. And when he is pitching well, he's not hittable. And you know that's something that we kind of throw around a little bit sometimes, but when his curveball has bite and he's throwing it for strikes, I mean, they don't make bats wide enough to hit that thing. They just don't. So in terms of ceiling, Tukey's a pretty easy answer. He can throw mid to high 90s with a plus curveball and a changeup that's improving. Still not a very good one, but it's getting there. And you know, he's 20 years old, so he has plenty of time to figure out how to throw one. And more realistic, though, I mean, I like the idea. I like a player like Soroka as an ace down the road, maybe not as a hard-throwing, crazy good stuff, but maybe like a guy with 3-plus pitches that, you know, if he can throw them all consistently as plus pitches, that's exactly what you want out of a major leaguer. And with his command of the strike zone, could easily be an ace. But it's hard. It seems like the Braves have a lot of guys. They either have guys with a lot of ceiling, you know, the Colby Allards, the Tukey Toussaints, the Sean Newcombs, who could be, you know, what the definition of an ace is, which realistically there's only 10 guys in the entire league that have that sort of stuff. But more realistically, there's a lot. The Braves seem to have a lot of guys who are going to be like that 2-3 range. But if you have a rotation full of 2s and 3s, you're not doing bad.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Newcomb. This is not a question we got, but more of one from me. A lot of people have been starting to worry about Newcomb. because of the control. I think on especially on Twitter this last week or so, people are starting to kind of sound the alarm with Newcomb. I'm not doing that. He's only 20. He just turned 23 years old. But you know, what have you seen from Newcomb at least lately? I know the control is at least worrisome to a certain extent, but are you actually worried about it long term?
I mean, I think he's gonna be a guy who walks guys, just always. Like he's not a lot.
Yeah,
I
mean, that's fair.
You don't want him walking five guys a game, but there's plenty of very very good pitchers that walk three guys a game, and that's just true. The thing about him is that he needs to make sure he is making adjustments, but to throw more strikes doesn't have to be a ton because you still want to keep guys honest. I mean, you don't want to throw strikes all the time. You want to kind of live on the edges so that way at least guys have to guess as to whether or not they're going to be, you know, taking a ball or a strike. He just needs to make sure his stuff isn't hittable because in three of his last four starts, he's given up four hits or less. But in the other one, he gave up 10. Which that wasn't good at all. He's been much better at limiting damage, and he's been cutting down the walks have been getting better. I wish he was striking out a few more guys to kind of coincide with that drop off, but it's pretty clear he's making adjustments to his approach in pitching. I mean, his last start he gave up 2 earned runs, 0 walks, 7 innings. 3 hits.
We'll take that all day. I'm pretty
exactly.
Sure.
He's still having to figure things out, but I mean the jump to Double A is one of the tougher jumps that you can make in the minors, because that's kind of the where you kind of lose the most guys, and that so the hitters that you're going against really do know how to hit and know how to manage counts and things like that. And he's just he's a guy who's relatively new to pitching. Especially for a college guy, and he's still striking out plenty enough guys. And if you just give him some time, is he gonna be a guy we see of in Atlanta this year? Probably not. But he still has plenty of time, and his stuff is very very good. And if he gets just a little bit better at harnessing it, he's gonna be really good.
Yeah, I'm still a big fan as well. I think it's almost it's not even almost. It's unfair to Newcomb that he's gonna get compared to Simmons. Because that was the exchange. He was the principal return for Andrelton Simmons, so the pressure is going to be a little bit higher on him because people just love Andrelton Simmons, and with good reason. Especially he hasn't had a great year in with the Angels by any means, but people are going to remember how good and how electric he was here. So to be the guy that you get for Andrelton Simmons kind of adds that extra layer of pressure on Newcomb, and I think it also led a lot of fans to think he was closer than he was when he got here. But as you mentioned, there's still plenty of time here. He just turned 23. And he's got real stuff. His high end stuff is real. Yep. And, yep. Even if he's not like a super duper ace, I think it's a pretty good bet that he's going to make it.
And it's so hard to find a super, like, I feel like that people just like think that these super duper aces are just floating around all over the place on everyone else's team. And it kind of drives me crazy because there are not many of those guys.
Well, I think part of the thing with Newcomb is that he was easily Los Angeles' best prospect, but it was because they had no prospects. Like he's an awesome he's a really good prospect, but at the same time, it was like, oh, he's the one prospect. It's like because the Angels had nobody else.
Yep, so, I mean, he's still even with the year he's had this year, where he's been pretty good. Has had a couple rough starts, but nothing too crazy. Still an ERA under 4. Still striking out a batter an inning, that's still good. He's still a top 30 prospect in baseball. And those are guys that you want in your farm system. And I am pretty sure that if the Angels could take it back, they would actually send back Andrelton Simmons because their farm system is the worst I've seen since I've been following farm systems. Theirs is really bad.
Which is amazing considering you saw the Braves a couple years ago and how bad it was.
Yeah, no, this worse.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
I have to look at their draftees this year. I'm not sure if they have a top 100 prospect in their minor league system. Period.
Woo.
Yeah.
We won't bury the Angels, but that's not a lot of fun.
No.
Eric, I'm not gonna keep pestering you with questions. Is there anything you need to plug or want to get out there? I know obviously our Talking Chop, our prospect guys are always turning out content. Anything in particular that you want to put out there today for the listeners to go out and check out?
Short season ball. Now that we've had the draft, the short season ball is about to start. It's going to be starting in the 23rd or 24th, I think, with the GCL Braves and the Danville Braves. Garrett, as soon as I let him sleep for a little while, he's going to write up a preview about short season ball, see where a lot of these draftees are going to be playing. Spoiler alert, probably a lot of them are going to be on the GCL Braves since they're mostly high school prep guys. And then the July 2nd, the international free agent market is just around the corner, and that's going to be pretty exciting, especially for these fans who really want to see more bats in the system, because the top player in the entirety of the international free agent market, Kevin Maton, is supposed to be kind of one of those once-in-a-generation talents. You don't really get to sign these guys as amateurs very often, and the Braves are the overwhelming favorites to sign him. You're talking about the third base prospect, in all likelihood, who can really, really, really hit, has been compared favorably to Miguel Cabrera, and that, in terms of, like, international signees, that's not a name that gets comps.
He's, Lord have mercy, yes.
No. So, most scouts saying, like, you know, you never say anyone's a sure thing anymore because, you know, things do happen, but no one thinks that this guy is going to be a miss, and, you know, that's very exciting for the Braves fans. And once we kind of, you know, do a little bit of short season, you know, preview stuff, we're going to have more international free agent market stuff coming up, and hopefully, you know, sometime after the All-Star break, I'll get to sleep. And that's going to be pretty exciting for me.
Yeah, Eric and those guys have been killing it. Be sure to stay tuned to Talking Chop throughout that. The Braves have an off day on Monday before they resume playing. They play on Tuesday in Miami against the Marlins, start a series there, and be sure to stay tuned to everything that we do. Follow us on Twitter at Talking Chop. You can follow me at BT Roland. You can follow Eric at Leprechaun. And we will, if you're going to have trouble spelling that, we will put it in the post. Eric, we appreciate your time as always, my friend.
Absolutely, man. It's always good talking to you.
Thanks for having us, everybody, and stay tuned for next week's episode.